Madam President, and trust is important in every situation in life when you want to have mutual development, and autonomy might be a way of creating trust, but we know it takes quite a long time because obviously most minorities or in groups in conflict, they ask for independence. But as Mr. Guy here says, it is today, he thinks, it's now than in earlier part of the 20th century, more liable to see autonomies develop. I'm very curious to hear what he means by that. But now we have to go back a little in our discussions here, and I will ask Elisabeth Rehn to continue. Please.
Thank you. The President of the Republic made it very easy for me to continue where I just had started, because you mentioned in one way the trust from the surrounding, from those who are parties in something that is happening. You also talked about the Balkans and what is happening there with smaller states, who still, some of them have a lot of trouble. And I was just mentioning that in Kosovo, the development was very, very quick. From my early talks with President Ibrahim Rugova, who was the real person talking for autonomy for Kosovo, and very often also took a parallel to the Åland Islands. Then, as the development went in worse and worse way, so then finally he also demanded the total independence, and we know what has happened there since. And there, of course, in one way, we also come to this, that those who are surrounding, those external actors, have a lot of importance to what will happen. External actors in the case of Kosovo had a lot to say, good or bad, that we still can discuss with the bombings, with all of this that happened, but there were clear interests. And unfortunately, there are interests in so many cases. You also mentioned very quickly, Madam President, Palestine, Israel. And if not the external actors would be so strong for very, what would I say, different reasons than what is the best for the region, then it perhaps would be much easier. We know that there are so many interests that are playing into the internal policies of, for instance, United States, the Arab League, everybody. And though we don't know that for the whole region, it's extremely important that the question of the state of Palestine must be solved. Otherwise, nothing will be better there. And the Arab Spring, who now is Arab autumn and soon Arab winter, will continue to have all the problems there without very much of justice. So these are problems, and this, when external actors have made up, for instance, a peace program, look at the Balkans and the Dayton Agreement. They were pushed to something, and then I especially talk about Bosnia and Herzegovina. That was not their wish. Intelligent gentlemen very far from Bosnia were just drawing maps and placing people somewhere, perhaps very close to their own home, but with no possibility at that time to go back to be internally displaced persons. Then it ended with the Republika Srpska entity and the federation with the Bosniaks and Croats together. And they definitely did not love each other, and they don't love each other today either. I'm very often in Bosnia, almost monthly, talk with the political leadership and international leadership and normal good people, not meaning that political leaderships can't be normal, but but really those who are on the grassroots level. And now there are more and more requests that that there would be also a Croatian entity within mm-hmm. Bosnia and Herzegovina that will mess up this even more. Or is that the solution? I think that it shows that this some kind of self-determination is very important for groups of people who feel some kind of similarity, language. There are some differences in the language, it's not very big, but some kind of feeling where I belong. And that's something that must be dealt with really very carefully. It's important, and I would like to end here because this is meant to be a discussion, that those who are the external actors should be showing impartiality, not being biased, because that's the problem all over. Today, through my work with the ICC, I mostly engage with Africa, Northern Uganda, DRC. They visit now and then, and I'm both unhappy and sometimes happy. Central African Republic, Kenya will come in the program. Sudan should be there. There are some interesting reasons why there have been problems with Sudan. You know, this trust fund for victims is operating in countries where we have indicted people to the ICC. Libya perhaps will come now, Ivory Coast. In all of them, if there are external interests, economic, political, whatever, it's always making the decisions much more difficult to get. And I think we have to look into this very strongly. Grateful for that Sweden and Finland really can join each other and be of support, hopefully felt also support here in Åland for the autonomy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for pointing out the role of external interest. I suppose they can be both bad and good. In the case of Åland, it was good with the League of Nations, and it stabilized the discussions between Sweden and Finland, and gave the solution of international ground. Now, after League of Nations, we had the United Nations and Jan Eliasson, and we are very grateful for that.
Thank you very much. President of the Republic, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, great to be here. I am the 10th person to speak this morning, and I'm the first man to speak.
Well, now you know how it feels.
It's a very unusual situation. I don't think I've ever been in this situation before. I you know the Swedish artist Li Lindfors, who has her father is from Åland, and she has strong connections to the Åland Islands. I talked to her the other day, and I said I was going to go to Åland, and she said, "What are the main features of Åland?" And that's why I say this in connection with being the 10th speaker and first man. She said, "Åland is a place where women are extraordinarily strong, and it goes back to the sailor wife syndrome, and up to the President of the Republic and the head of government of Åland, and being at a meeting with this, with the leadership of the Åland Island Institute, also being strongly female dominated. I say that in a positive sense. My wife would be very happy that I made this introduction. Please record it. Anyway, I have an experience mostly in international diplomacy, of course, also in Swedish government, but Barbara mentioned my background in the UN, and I've done 6 mediations, I think, in the UN, and also for the OSCE, the Nagorno-Karabakh mediation, also with Terry after me, with Talviti succeeding me. And even in my CV, it says that I haven't written it myself, because it says that I have long experience in conflict resolution and mediation. I must tell you that when I was in New York at a meeting about 2 years ago, I went to an NGO, and I didn't recognize the people in the room. I said, this with dreamy eyes and long beards, and that's not the foreign policy crowd, I said to myself. Then I looked at the invitation in front of me, saying, come and meet Mr. Jan Eliasson. That's how they pronounce it. He's a specialist, and that's when I realized that I had come to the wrong public, wrong audience, or they come to the wrong speaker, because they said, he's an expert on conflict resolution and meditation. Same speech, don't worry. Well, I really wanted very much to come to this meeting because it's a fascinating issue. It has a deep emotional aspect for a Swede, of course, having worked in government for long. We have a unique historic triangular relationship, Sweden, Finland, and Åland. And it has very, very, very strong cultural and language and even emotional relations, which we should realize and recognize, which is a strong glue, a strong factor bringing us together. If we ever need a bridge between Sweden and Finland, which I don't think we ever need, of course, Åland is the natural such bridge, especially in the language issues. What Tarja said is extremely, very, very, extremely important, that Åland's position actually strengthens the Swedish language position in Finland. And that is, of course, very important for us and for the Nordic cooperation, as we all know. The second aspect is that I'm, of course, a friend of peaceful settlement of disputes, and my favorite article of the UN Charter is Chapter 6, Article 33. It's what I call Christmas Eve for a diplomat. It requires the parties to any dispute to, first of all, seek a solution by negotiation, inquiry, mediation, conciliation, arbitration, judicial settlement, resort to regional agencies or arrangements, or other peaceful means of their own choice. This is Chapter 6 of the UN Charter. Unfortunately, not as much used as it should. We very often land very quickly into Chapter 7, the use of force, but this is where we need to work much, much harder. The question to this panel is, how useful is autonomy today as a conflict resolution tool? And I would say it is definitely useful, but not as much as it should. And as I've already implied, not as early as it should. We have seen, unfortunately, less of civil wars in the world since the early 90s, when they exploded, when the wet blanket of the Cold War disappeared. Less of civil wars, but I would also say, unfortunately, more of tensions of ethnic and religious character. And where more and more forces develop a theory where if you belong to a special ethnic or religious or language group, you need to go in the direction of separation from the state. This is, of course, more common in authoritarian or totalitarian societies, where these ethnic and religious and language rights are not respected, where they see only violence as the method to bring about respect of those rights. So in fact, I have come also to another deeper conclusion on democracy. I think in today's world, a democracy will not be fully effective if it does not have guarantees for minorities. If you fail to give guarantees to minorities, you have a force inside the system that will be very explosive. Paradoxically, a majority can by democratic means make very unfair solutions for a minority, and with full acceptance of the democratic rights that the majority rules. Mm. So in fact, this is, I think, a very important conclusion, and where the Åland example also plays a very important role, since already 90 years ago it was established that it was not only a question of self-government, demilitarization and neutralization, but also cultural and language rights. So the question now is that the main issue for me is that I have been involved using the Åland example in negotiations actively. I brought it out actively in the Nagorno-Karabakh negotiations. I have brought it out, but without success, in Sudan. I have mentioned it with the Somalis once upon a time. It has been met with very, very negative reactions, mostly because the conflicts have gone too far. The option of being integrated into the country, it's like Nagorno-Karabakh, fully integrated in Azerbaijan, is a completely unacceptable, of course, for the Nagorno-Karabakhi and the Armenians in that case. But also the separation is seen as absolutely unacceptable for the other part. And the reason why it is so enormously difficult if you come in late in the process is that the violence has been used to such an extent that the alternatives left for the population in question asking for these rights are very unpleasant. Either to go back, to be integrated into a nation where they have fought battles and where the hatred has gone even deeper, or being separated along ethnic or religious lines. I myself am pretty split about this. I recognize that if your rights are violated and there is no movement in respect of these rights, then of course it is perhaps logically acceptable that you see a conflict erupting. On the other hand, I must say it's not the best message to our children in this world if you say that if you belong to an ethnic and religious minority, you have the right to a nation. I can understand it, but if Africa, for instance, or even Europe, would be divided now along ethnic or religious lines, what kind of message do we then have? That's why Bosnia, Elizabeth, is so important, that it was stated that this would prove that one could live together with different ethnic or religious entities inside your own nation. But this is really a very, very difficult dilemma. We have to prove that we can work together. And this is very, very important now in Europe, where you have the growing xenophobia and where you have growing identity, growing discussion of identities in we and them, vi och dem, and where you start even to, in political debate, to discuss us and them. That's the beginning also of going the road of separation, which should not be the natural choice if you have a living democracy, with a democracy that also gives the rights to the minorities so that they can live together side by side with other groups in a society. And that's the deeper, I think, implication of the Åland model, that you are also proving that you have a society which thrives on this and where you also have peace in this region to a remarkable degree. In the UN, they speak about this area as the good news in the world, the whole Baltic area, with not least the integration of the Baltic states into the European Union. So that would be my introduction. I would only just like to give one example of the sensitivity of the issue of autonomy. I talked to the Armenians and the Azeris and the Nagorno-Karabakhi about the Åland model. In the end, even the word autonomy became a bit infected, I must say. So I said what we're talking about is autonomy plus or independence minus. They like that, you know, particularly independence minus, apart from the minus, of course. But I then used a chart made by Kjell-Åke Nordqvist, who is a friend of your board here, I listed the different elements of autonomy. The local legislation, language, and so forth, and taxation, and I asked them to tell me how far on the scale, high and low, you would like to have in the next model, and then they refused to answer. Goodbye, head of government. You have other duties now. I will join. We will join you. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, they refused to answer that questionnaire, Kjell-Åke. They could not answer it because it was so sensitive for them to say that, yes, we want this and not that. That shows that the autonomy issue is both necessary, but it needs to be applied early in the conflicts. When we feel the first vibrations, that's when the autonomy discussions must come up, or the enrichment of democracy. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think what you said is very important about how violent the conflict is. I mean, it's very characteristic for the Åland solution that there was not blood shed. There was no brother or son or husband who had to take revenge on anybody afterwards using violence. So that is an important precondition if one wants to use the Åland example. On the other hand, it was interesting the conclusion you made that how to handle the fact that if you are a minority which is an object for violence, that then you should go for independence. That how can we convince minorities or ethnic groups in violent conflicts that autonomy could be a solution? And I'm referring the third time to Professor Guy. He will talk in the afternoon, and I will end up with this. He says, it is evident that autonomy plays a much larger role in the organization of states and regions now than in the early part of the 20th century. I think we will close the discussion now, or Sia wants to have something. The thing is that I have to leave and the speaker have to leave, but Sia will take over and you continue.
Exactly. We don't want to cut the discussion, but we have to restrict the parliament, so the solution is that the parliamentarians are excused to leave. They have already read the book quite well, so we know that they have done their homework, and we will meet them later today. But of course, I'm sure that there are many questions.
The president.
The president, first of all.